Hello, all you athletes. Welcome back to the 2024 Mental Minor League Summit that I put together specifically for you guys. Every person that I've brought on has had some impact in me and in my life and in my development. And this person is, this person's probably one of my favorite stories, and I've told it multiple times. It's 1 a.m. I'm at a 24-hour fitness in Portland, Oregon. And I see this guy focused as could be, getting jumpers up with a basketball that is just the size of the rim. And as I'm sitting there watching him, I'm like, what in the world is this guy training for? You know, that is very specific. It is very focused. It is very determined. And it is 1:10 in the morning. So I finally walk up to him and I was like, I got to ask, what are you doing? Like, why are you so focused? Like, what are you preparing for, like a tournament, something? And he goes, it's something I like to incorporate with some of my clients sometimes, you know, with therapy and with sports therapy and with work like that. And I was like, oh, instant, like a sinking feeling of connection. And I said, do you do free consultations? I went from knowing him for 10 seconds to immediately, do you do free consultations? And he was like, yeah. You know, do you want me to be your sports psychologist or like your therapist? And I was like, I'm going to cry at first, so probably therapist. I haven't talked a whole lot about my family life. And then we can move into sports. And now we're here 8 years later, I believe. And this guy is literally one of my best friends in the world. And we came through that through a very professional relationship where I wanted him to be a part of my team, you know, going forward in life. And as I made different decisions and based on my nature with mentoring people and the way that I live my life, it just kind of became a thing where we got to coexist in a world, and it's just been so cool. And I'm so excited to introduce you guys to him. So with that being said, that's about as short as I can go with introducing my good friend, Tim Marials. Tim, thanks for being here.
Well, I am equally excited to be here. This is my guy, 100%. And I love when you tell that story, and it's so accurate. And I'm a little embarrassed at this. You know, you got this old guy at the gym with this giant basketball shooting at 1 a.m. going, you know, what is this guy preparing for? And but that is exactly what happened. And you're right. You cut to the chase. And my first thought was, who is this guy? You know, and I was so kind of focused in on what I was doing. I wasn't paying attention to this 6'6", 6'7" guy that was probably doing all kinds of other stuff on the other end. And it has been an incredible journey to work with you on such a multiplicity of depths. And to also make the choice, which was kind of a professional choice of, on one hand, working you in, with you in the therapeutic realm and doing deep work, which I think has kind of cleared some of the path for you, as well as finding in that a lifelong friendship and feeling honored to be a part of the team.
Yeah, that's exactly how it's felt throughout the years. And I think that's a perfect place for us to segue into what we're going to talk about for you guys. Because I can stand here and tell stories and just reminisce for the next hour and not actually get something out of it for you guys, probably. So I want to talk about clearing the path first. You know, I think the first 25 minutes or so for us can be helping you guys understand how important it is to clear the path as we go through these phases. One of the first things that you said to me, I remember when I was even in the relationship realm, it's like, okay, we've worked through these four phases now of these things that are important for us. And I think the first one, as we were clearing out, you know, some of the things from our past, was being really curious. You know, we went back and you gave me such a space to hold. You're holding a container. So why would you say that it's important for athletes to understand how much that stuff that they're still holding on to can impact the way that they play impact the way that their relationships are going to be, impact the way that they walk to a gym and are noticed. You know, I've noticed that for myself personally. As I've cleared the path, as I've cleared the feelings of frustration, of loneliness, of contempt, of all of those things that I was holding on to for so long, I noticed when I walked into a gym, the whole gym was so much different. The vibe was different. Is that something that you have noticed, maybe in for me personally? We can talk about me personally, or that athletes could think about taking, you know, something like therapy a lot more seriously.
Well, I think that it's really easy to get very broad with this, because these things, this clearing of the path, these are things that will absolutely help us as athletes, but they'll also help us as friends, fathers, daughters, brothers, sisters. These things that lie underneath, these are barriers for all of us becoming the selves that we want to. And so working on what's underneath is a thing that is absolutely 1,000% applicable to any part of your life, but especially when you are expected to be in a place of performance. So anything that you can remove, any part of the path that you can clear, I'd like to talk about it almost as creating an internal strength and self-structure that is going to be the foundation that you can rely on.
Mm-hmm.
And if that's wobbly, how is the house going to stand up? Right? Especially how is the house, right? We're talking about performance here and moving things out of the way. How is the house going to manage the storm? And the stronger that foundation is, the more that we've cleared out from underneath, the more that that house is going to withstand those moments of stress, anxiety, things that impact confidence. All of those things are helped by doing the work to clear out what's underneath.
Is that why we use a lot of metaphors? You know, when we were going through, we can just use I'm an open book to the whole world, so it doesn't bother me one second to use things that we've talked about. But is that why metaphors have been so impactful? The ones that I think stand out the most is the trust tree. The trust tree was truly impactful of trying to feel something and integrate it into my system that would allow me to see the world differently and see the things that have happened a lot differently and maybe let things go or put them into their proper place. Is that why metaphors and picturing things can be incredibly impactful for anybody, much less an athlete?
Yeah, and I think it goes to us talking about some of the style of work that I do, where I do in my performance work with athletes, professional ballet dancers, professional martial artists, and also with other clients that I see. I do what's called attachment-focused EMDR. EMDR stands for rapid eye desensitization and reprocessing, which is a whole lot of noise about that. It is a very empirically studied both performance and mental health treatment that allows us to work through and process trauma. But the beginning stages of that are the pillars that I'm talking about. Creating this internal structure that you can take with you. And the trust tree that you were talking about is one of the pillars that is embedded. And this gets us into a little bit of a scientific-y kind of conversation about adaptive information processing, which is basically the healing part of the brain. And the way that you access that is through this thing called bilateral stimulation, meaning having a touch on one side of the body and then the other. In an office, you hold tappers in your hands when, you know, but any kind of tapping allows you to connect the left brain and the right brain back and forth, left and right, left and right. Right brain being emotion mind, where often almost all difficulties, trauma, childhood difficulties, things that we grew up with that impact us are usually stored in the right brain. And the left brain is the logic mind, where we're able to figure all these things out, where we can make sense of things. When you have trauma, it gets stuck over here in this right brain. When you start to go left and right, you're beginning to connect the logic mind with the emotion mind back and forth. Every tap is basically activating the healing aspect of your brain. When everything's stuck over here in emotion and you can't make sense of it, it absolutely deeply impacts you.
Mm-hmm.
When you can start to do this, things start to make sense. You can start to work on what's underneath. And like you said, and I love the metaphor of clearing the path, right? How do you walk? Imagine yourself walking, talk about a metaphor, walking through a forest full of brambles and branches and trying to hack your way through,
mm-hmm.
versus this beautiful, clear path that you could see in front of you with a nice, soft place to put your feet safely. And that's what we work on creating.
Well, and in so many of our conversations, we've used multiple metaphors, but if we're going to go down this one with things that I talk about with my clients too, it would be, if I could take the equivalent of, you know, I talk a lot about a computer system and how these things that have happened to us that we haven't resolved or that are still frustrating us, they might be running in the background. If you hit control alt delete on your computer, you'd have 1% dedicated towards something. You're like, what is this file? You double click on it, you're like, when my aunt said something like about my personality and something else that made me feel uncomfortable back when I was 15, like that's still running, that's there. And so if I was thinking about it, as you were walking through a forest, it would be the equivalent of noticing like there's branches just like broken off and you're like, gosh, what the heck is that? And you like take a deeper look and you're like, dang, that's the time where I missed 8 free throws in a row. And like, look at the rubbish, look at all this muck. And this is the four, like, it's like a, it's a habitat you're, let's say you're forced to live in. So you're walking through a habitat you're forced to live in. It's like an igloo style, or it's like a snow globe style. And you're walking through and you're just like, man, there's stuff everywhere.
Everywhere. And your metaphor of the virus running in the background is, I mean, what does that do? Slows down your computer. If there's enough of those in there, eventually the computer doesn't work. And I think that is the two metaphors are completely different, of the forest and the computer, but they also both synthesize exactly what we're talking about, which is the fact that when those things are running in the background, they impact you. When you had a really rough childhood, believe it or not, it's going to impact you when you're walking in the gym or when you're trying to shoot a free throw in a poignant point of the game. All of these things impact us. So imagine being able to pull those out. Imagine the breath that can be taken when we've cleared the path. And that is, and it's not for the faint of heart.
Mm-mm.
This work is not for the faint of heart. It is not easy to go, hey, you know what? There's some things that are maybe getting in my way of who I could be, me being like to be in my peak self. And I wanted to just put a little thing in. When you get a cut in your body, what happens? The body sends, they send all this stuff, it heals. And what this work is the same work for the brain. We're literally using this to light up all of the brain, left and right, and have everything start to talk, which is a healing modality, which changes things. And that trust tree was, I think, one of your figures, right? Because the way that EMDR works is you start off with four figures, peaceful place, nurturing figures, protective figures, and wise figures. And I think that wise place for you was that tree. But all of those things, when they're put in place, just that literally changes your entire neurobiological functioning. You have new synapses in your body and your mind are different.
I think what's important for the athletes listening to this is how important it is to name things in a certain, in a way that makes sense to us. And I'm, this is why I'm kind of asking this, and put like a picture to it, put a, and then put, it gives it like a plan almost, like as you're talking about moving it from that stuck side on the right over here into the curious logical side. I feel like it allows you to come up with a game plan of how can I best work through this? And you're right. It is not for the faint of the heart. You know, there's recovery and mental health is kind of a pop word. Anytime something gets into a buzzword category, sometimes it can be seen as sexy. You know, it can be seen as like, oh yeah, you know, you got to go through it. You know, the mental toughness, all those kinds of things. It's like when you're in it, and your exact words to me one time is, yeah, you can spit that out. And I'm just like in the middle of my floor. And I'm like, I can clean that up later. You know, it's that's the most vile taste that is coming up from some of these moments that might be in your past. But when you give it a name, and when you give it a picture, and when you give it life again, and you're in a safe place, and you're talking to someone that you can trust, and you're tapping, I feel like it gives you a chance to finally work through it and to finally allow the adult mind be in charge. I think that's something that maybe you could talk about. Definitely.
Well, that a lot of times, many of the things that do get in the way that are parts that are about clearing away are usually from traumatic or difficult experiences that have happened, you know. Adverse childhood experiences are probably number one on the list, and those things are things that will impact you. And so working through those, be it something like incredibly significant that you'd gone through with your father and mm-hmm. the loss of him and the ongoing loss of him by him being in your life, but not being able to be in your life the way that he was because of his brain injury and the accident. Those were incredibly impactful for you. Those were pain points that were sticking with you. And I think what's really important is what you're talking about is bringing those things into awareness. Mm-hmm. And I think really big picture, what we're talking about and what is vital is the awareness aspect. That doing mindfulness work, being able to have awareness of what's going on within you allows you then to start to change those things. And you have done an incredible amount of work of self-discovery by being aware. But one of the things that the EMDR can do that we can't sometimes on our own is get to what's deeply underneath. Some of the places that we ended up, which I don't know if you want to talk about.
Anything is on the board.
Right, but that you might not, you probably didn't go in going, oh, there's a part of me that's still stuck in that hospital room mm-hmm. with my dad. You didn't know that. We didn't go in going, oh, this is what we need to work on. And so the ability to have a way to go to what's underneath. On one hand, you're building up the self-structure and you're doing that in order to take the journey. Mm-hmm. And I like to talk about the journey as, you know, I'm kind of like your guide where we throw our scuba tanks on, we go through all the safety, we make sure that you're solid, that you're going to be okay by kind of doing this internal structuring of the pillars. And then I'm going to go with you and we're going to dive down into this cave and I'm your safety net. I'm going to make sure that you get out of there okay. I'm going to make sure that I'm right by your side. And I do think that safety is absolute important part of all of this.
Mm-hmm.
Working with the right type of people, working with safe people and finding that. And also you're working to find safety within yourself in the process. And let me just ask you, I know I'm putting you on the spot, but
let's do it.
How safe do you feel now compared to how safe you used to feel?
I could probably get emotional even when you just thinking about the difference of trust, but safety. comes with that. I know that I'm not going to involuntarily hurt myself with my performance, with the way that I manage a relationship, with the impulsivity of making decisions, with any of those things. And I'm not going to solicit advice from those that I should not be soliciting advice from, which I think is something that probably most people have done in their past because they only have a small, maybe circle that are around them. And I'm also not going to respond in a way that is my family bloodline's response, which is huge.
Yeah, I just want to pause you for a half a second and say, imagine, and this is for everyone listening, imagine having the power to change your relational patterns and the things that have forever gotten in your way.
You feel like that there is... This is good because I like athletes being able to see in real time on how you can work your way through these things too. Because I know what it feels like to need guidance, to have this, like, it's like a release valve that builds up and the anxiety that builds up and the heart starts pounding and you want to reach out. You want to, I remember telling you this as I was going through the 45 days of just despair that I went through. But I remember in the, even though I felt the low one of the lowest that I've ever felt, I also felt powerful. Because there was no point where I was like, I'm not in any danger to myself or to anybody. And this is just something that I have to go through as a human being. And I can go through it alone and be totally fine. And in fact, I'm going to have a lot more power and trust in myself through going through this. And then when I reach out to my friends, I'm like, yeah, this is the journey that I'm going on. And so safety is not even, it doesn't even scratch the surface, I think, of how empowered I feel, you know, because it's one thing, because at one point when we're going through trauma, our goal is to get back to some form of normalcy. When we want to be leaders and we want to be impactful, the goal is much higher than that. So it's like you get to that cliff of like, okay, I'm on a plateau of grace. And that's actually, I just told someone that recently. I recently had a couple panic attacks that were minuscule. You actually didn't know about this. Hey, what's up? But I recently had a couple mini panic attacks that happened at night. And my heart was acting funny. And there was some additional stress with some change that has happened here. And I leaned on God, I leaned on the Bible, and I leaned on things that I know are for me. And the response I kept saying was, this is for me. I don't want it to be like this, but your will, not mine. And I think having the trust in God and Jesus and understanding that the attachment of what happens in my life is not of importance, that part makes me feel safe. The fact that I know that danger can happen and I'm still going to be me makes me feel safer than anything.
I would say that empowerment, right? As a player, as a leader, as people in leadership positions, that's a huge aspect of the clearing of the path. Is that yes, you may go through difficulties, but you will have the empowerment of knowing you can get through it. And I don't think there's anything that's much more frightening than having an anxiety attack, right? Where all of a sudden this thing comes up out of nowhere and you're like, holy crap. And your body starts responding like it's going into fight, flight, or freeze. And it's a terrifying experience. And yet in the midst of that, I think part of what you're saying is I still had things to hold on to.
I still felt calm. It was the weirdest panic attack ever. My heart was beating so weirdly. I was checking my pulse. And people, if you've had one of those, there's a part of you that feels like you're going to have a heart attack. Part of you feels like your heart's going to stop. And a part of you that's just like, I don't want to lay down again. And I went and sat. I just went and sat in my chair. I gave this advice to a kid a long time ago. He's like, I can wake up in the middle of the night and I can't go back to sleep. And I have all these thoughts going on. And I said, Maybe that's a good time for you. Maybe you can embrace this. Maybe you can wake up, understand you're just going to be awake for an hour anyways. If you're awake for an hour every single time or 2 hours, and when you go back to sleep, it's terrible sleep anyways, then wake up. Go read. Go do something. Go do something that's productive. Like, embrace it and fight it in a different way. And I took up my own advice. I went and sat in my reading chair, turned on my mini light, and I just read the Bible. And eventually I fell asleep in my chair like I was, you know, 75. And I woke up and I still felt, I felt a little more tired. I moved to the couch, which is something I used to do when I had panic attacks when I was a kid. I'd build up all these layers of blankets and make it just as even as the edge and turn on Baseball Tonight or Sports Center. And I'd just fall asleep once I was tired. But the different, unique nature allowed it me to not feel like I was in a tomb of my own thoughts. And I fell asleep.
What a powerful metaphor.
But that's what I want athletes to understand, is you can be creative. You can embrace these things. You can, and I want people to do it with somebody. I want them to do it with a support of a professional, or if they're not going to maybe do therapy, maybe they're just going to do coaching and kind of figure out their life and be curious about that. Then you work with someone like myself who does coaching. But when you get curious about life, and you allow yourself to go to these places, I feel like you soften your heart, which is the part in the Bible that has probably impacted me the most. We harden our hearts over time over things that we don't think are impacting us, and they are. We have these things that have happened to us a long time ago. They were like, yeah, whatever, it's no big deal. It was. I want people to wake up and understand that it's okay to be soft for a moment to be strong for the rest of their lives.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, I think about, speaking of empowerment, many people have heard the Kevin Love story and the fact that he deals with incredible anxiety attacks. And yet I know from that, him putting that out there and accepting that and actually getting help was empowering.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's about the softening. He had to soften and actually manage it and deal with it and put it out there, have it be vulnerable. Hey, this is something, I am this, you know, 6'9", 6'10", professional athlete with all the money in the world. How could I be on the bench not being able to go in the game because I feel like I'm going to have a heart attack? But there's something about getting vulnerable with it that is empowering.
Mm-hmm.
I think there is something about the closing off to things that keeps things in that cave in the dark that I was talking about, that are still means that it's running in the background. Closing it off, putting a big rock in front of that cave doesn't make it go away. And there's something, like you talked about, getting curious, having awareness, acceptance.
Mm-hmm.
Accepting that there are things that can get in the way, and being able to accept them within yourself. I think acceptance is a big part of empowerment. There's a quote, you know, I like my quotes. It's a quote from Buddha, not going to the Bible, but in the end, what matters most is how well did you live, how well did you love, and how well did you learn to let go? And the first two, how well did you live and how well do you love, those are definitely 100% connected to that third one. It's just how well did you learn to let go? And letting go is acceptance. It is being vulnerable. It is saying, hey, these things are getting in my way. And all of this is about clearing the path, right? And I think that you can't clear a path until you accept that there's barriers, that there's things in the way. And we all have them, every single one of us. We all have things that are impacting us.
I think about how I met you and how I know you, but also where you come from. I think there's this, especially for athletes, there's this idea of therapies for people that are weak. And it's becoming a little bit more of a thing. Like, you know, Kevin Love and the people that have spoken out have probably helped.
DeRozan's, right, you know, Yeah. It
probably helped. But still, there's that like, I'm strong, I don't need that. And I think that's kind of the part that, you know, maybe you can talk about a little bit of what your background is before you come into the fact that you live in a site of you want to love, you want to care, you want to be that guide for people who jumps in with a scuba tank and goes with them. That's not necessarily where you came from.
And no, so it's taken a long time to get for me to be in a place where I could be the safety for other people, because I had to find my own. And so many pieces on a journey that just kind of started with being in an impoverished childhood where, you know, food stamps and, you know, I don't think I got a new pair of shoes in my childhood, you know, like those kind of things. Having a dad that was pretty absent, and when he wasn't absent, was dealing with substances. A mom who was very violent physically because she had her own issues and her own substance challenges. You're talking about a childhood that is, you know, not for the faint of heart, not friendly. And it really, in a lot of ways, impacted me and beat me down. And at the same time, and this was, I think, a big part of in my entire journey, was having a grandmother who was solid. Sometimes it just takes that one person that was solid with you. And I think a big part of the work that I do and that I try to cultivate in other people is them being solid within themselves and learning that, and that they can be that. And I think a big part of my journey was building that over time. My grandmother, when I was 6, 7 years old, used to talk to me constantly about watching everyone around me and picking who I wanted to be. She was a big part in the beginning of my empowerment, where I, A, had a safe person, and B, I had someone who was helping me start to pay attention to myself and those around me. She started to, by having me watch my parents, she started to let me know that I could pick who I wanted to be, that I could start to cultivate that within myself. I didn't have to use drugs and alcohol. I didn't have to escape. You know, there's a lot of time that I spent at my grandma's in the hood, where I was the only white kid on the block. And I feel like I learned an incredible amount of resilience, honestly, of being connected to the African-American community and the lessons that I learned there. But that followed by getting into dance very early, become a professional dancer, finding the one thing that actually helped me find and start to feel confident about myself. And dance led to martial arts, and martial arts led to meditation and mindfulness and fighting, which is like one of the most terrifying things. If you're actually present, it's a pretty terrifying thing to like I fought at the World Wushu Championships in China, you know, in San Francisco. All of those things were steps on the journey, and still I was impacted by the things of my childhood. And but I gained a lot of strength with every step along the way. Every single one of those was a step across the river of difficulty that got me to the other side and really helped me. But starting like a mindfulness meditation practice at 18, 19 years old changed my life completely. Martial arts changed my life completely. The confidence that dance brought me, changed my life again completely. And I think that very early on, I got connected with an EMDR therapist before I had ever even knew at all what that was. And because I struggled with negative cyclical thoughts that I would get stuck in, and I could not get out of. I could not climb my way out of that hole. And I worked with her for about 9 months before she actually retired. Or else I'd probably still be working with her. And in a matter of about 3 months, those cyclical thoughts were gone.
Wow.
And you could imagine, talk about empowerment, the freedom that I got as a human being to not be caught in that. So that's, I know that's, I'm spitting it a lot out, but the, yeah.
But I wanted people,
I've definitely been on a journey.
I wanted people to understand, just because of the potential, it's therapy, you know, it's this and that. Like it said, it's got a bit of a better rap now, but it's like, you didn't come from that place of light and love. Light and love and suburban neighborhood and everything's great. Everything's great, Johnny. No, you didn't. You came from a real place. You know, I came from a real place in a different area, but a real place, you know, of just difficulty and trauma. And we all do. Pretty much all do. I think I've met like one person in my life where I was just like, nothing has happened really in your life. I knew him very closely too. And I was like, you got every one of your grandparents, every one of your aunt and uncles, like, I love this for you. Your dog's still alive. Like, it's good for you. Man, the world's going to be interesting at some point. And I really hope that this beautiful cultivation of a nice family, nice everything kind of continues in that way. Because, you know, we'll see. But yeah, I just wanted people to understand that, you know, they're listening to somebody who understands too, you know, who gets, you know, where they're coming from. I think the last part on this before we go into the other part and go a little more offensive minded is that we have a chance to be curious. We have a chance to be vulnerable. We have a chance to go back and check. We also have a chance to not get in the car in the first place. Now, our cyclical thoughts do need to be worked on. I notice myself even as I'm walking sometimes where the thought will come up again and again. I'm like, nope, don't need to do that. Let it go. My personal mantra that I've come up with, I think I told you this, is it's like a detachment mini meditation. It's like, I am no one. And I detach myself from my labels of being a son, of being an athlete, of being a friend to someone. Maybe that's the part that's whatever's frustrating me. I detach myself from the label that is attached behind it. You know, if you're frustrated with a coach, if you detach yourself from, I am not a player right now on this walk, and you allow that part to go away, the importance that you're weighing of you being a player, it allows you to have that moment of, and if I were to do it right now, I'd be like, okay, I'm not a speaker. I'm not a podcaster. It takes the pressure away that you add to things.
I know nothing more powerful than being able to set something down.
I'm letting people sit with that one because that was nice. it's I am no thing. So I wouldn't know I was a human being until I knew I was a human being. So I release the labels. Again, I set something down of the pressures that I'm putting on myself because I'm human. I am nowhere. If I didn't have a phone telling me where I was, I would just be walking up this snowy hill. That's it. So I wouldn't have this, I'm going somewhere, or I am somewhere. I'm just present in the moment. And the last one is, I am no time. There's no time. And I can't tell you how many times we make decisions based off of what we think we need to do, based off of the time that we are given, when it's all a construct.
Yeah.
And when I allow all those to release, whatever cyclical thought is trying to run, doesn't run. Now, that is on top of 7 years of EMDR therapy during moments that I was like, know what? This is a more professional touch. I've tried to work through this myself. No, let's have a real session. And we did. And I would pay him whatever I pay him more than you ask sometimes, because that's what I wanted to do, because it was important to me to remain professional in those moments. But that's what I'm saying. It's on top of that. But the end is, we don't have to get in the car sometimes. And I think that was the last part I was going to give to you.
No, that's, I mean, I think if everybody just takes a moment and imagine being able to not have to have the pain, to be able to set it down, to not get in the car. That is, if I could give a gift to everybody out there, it would be like, hey, imagine not having to get in the car. It's a powerful thing.
Well, you go ahead.
And you've worked. So you've worked incredibly, incredibly hard on your mind. And it's changed your world.
Everything. Yeah, that was one of your metaphors that you would use, is if you have a thought and it's driving by, that's mean you have to get in. So that's the reason why I was passing that to you.
Oh yeah. No, I mean, we have this whole construct. It's a mindfulness meditation construct of our thoughts, our cars on the bridge passing overhead. And imagine, right, what do we do? Well, usually we get in the car, we start the story, we go on the whole drive on the journey of whatever that thought was. And a lot of the mindfulness work is realizing that, A, we're not our thoughts. We don't have to get in the car.
Yeah.
And I don't know if you want to just continue this and segue into the other aspect, or if we stop this one and start the next one.
So all I do is this right here.